Hey, everybody. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I continue my look back at the year that was in 2021 in the world of pro wrestling with returning guest, and he hasn't been here in a long time, John Alba of AdFreeShows.com. That's right, AdFreeShows.com, the Conrad Thompson Network. And we talk about his move there, which just happened this year, and the big change of embracing wrestling full-time in his life. And we go over the month of April 2021, WrestleMania month, which John was live for. This was a month that saw a lot of crazy things in WWE, especially look back on them now. Again, Mania, we had two nights of TakeOver. WWE began their talent cuts that would happen throughout the course of the year, cutting 10 talents, including the Samoa Joe. So we'll chat about that, the Iconics and so on. There was the Mickie James trash bag incident. If you guys remember that, I completely forgot that happened. Changes in the announce team. AEW had brought back Mike Tyson, which I completely forgot about. Kenny Omega became a champion, two different organizations, actually three different organizations. So yeah, Will Ospreay won the IWGP world title, all types of stuff. So we get to all that and more on this near hour of power, looking back at April 2021 in the world of pro wrestling. You, me, John Alba, let's do it right now. Well, as this year-end series rolls on, I want to continue to bring in the big guns, and I have been talking to, obviously, a lot of people from the Observer site for the first 3 months, but I want to go outside the family a little bit, and someone that's been a past guest on the show a long time ago, so I'm glad to have him back here. He is, he's had quite a year himself, and it seemed to be fitting. Looking back at this year of pro wrestling, someone's had a lot of personal change himself, and we'll talk about that. You can hear him on ad-free shows. You can see him maybe at your local wrestling venue. He's doing all types of stuff. You can obviously hear him, see him, all the good stuff. Your friend and mine, the man with the best hair in the business, and the man who I believe sang backup on the Bruce Springsteen version of Santa Claus is Coming to Town, it's John Alba. John, welcome back.
I actually prefer Merry Christmas, Baby, to his version of Santa Claus is Coming to Town, but I definitely appreciate the nod there to my jersey God. So thank you very much, Josh. It's great to be here. Great chatting with you. And you're not kidding, man. I was telling you off air, this whole month that we're going to talk about here is a total blur because there's just so much going on and so much change in the industry in such a short period of time.
Yeah, it's wild. And so I the reason I brought up the Bruce song, by the way, one, of course, is your Jersey roots, which you've always stayed true to, despite being a man of Florida. But my daughter, my five-year-old, for some reason, that's her favorite Christmas song right now. I have no idea why, but she wants to hear every single
Springsteen version.
Oh yeah, the Springsteen version specifically. Yeah,
I mean it's great. But yeah, that's interesting. So okay,
yeah. Pretty good stuff. So let's before we get into the stuff that happened, let's get into things that happened with you. Obviously, since the last time you joined us, and I think probably saw it on social media, what have you, if they follow you, you were working for Spectrum down there, sportscaster life and winning Emmys and doing the thing and doing some indie wrestling dates on the side. Obviously you and I know each other really from initially from Limitless Wrestling, promotion up here in Maine, but things have changed a lot for you. You've gone to, the Conrad universe, the expanded universe for ad free show. So tell us a little bit about that, kind of with the decision-making going into it and then why you finally decided to pull the trigger and what you're doing now.
Yeah, the Conrad Cinematic Universe, if you will, has certainly been all-encompassing. It's been cool, man. You know, I've joined his team, part of that including adfreeshows.com, which has a lot of extra bonus content to his established podcast. And there's different shows, too, that are exclusive to the platform. I have a long-form interview series on that site called One-on-One with John Alba. I have a debate show with the owner of the Monster Factory, Danny Cage, called Up for Debate. And I'm, you know, filling in on Conrad's major shows as well as we prepare to roll out even more programs, which I'm excited for the world to hear about real soon. But it's been a blast so far making this jump into pro wrestling on a full-time basis. You know, I was doing the sportscaster thing for 6-7 years in TV news, and it was a blast. And I still am doing some sports, traditional sports casting, but I was able to kind of carve out pro wrestling as my niche, and now I'm diving into that full time and maybe straying a little bit away from the hard news journalism side of things and more into the covering the industry from a storytelling standpoint and interviewing, which is my real passion. So getting to do more stuff that is a little more fulfilling for me has been really fun, and I'm really looking forward to doing even more.
How long had this decision-making or decision to do this kind of come into your mind? Obviously, I mean, you've been a wrestling fan forever and been involved forever, but when did you find, when were you finally like, I think this might be time to make the leap?
Yeah, it was actually around the time of this month that we're going to talk about here on this program, around April or so, right after WrestleMania week, actually, is when this became somewhat of a viability that this would be a potential path forward for me. I kind of knew that I was going to be leaving what I was doing at Spectrum, because there were a lot of factors that I knew it was not my long-term place. And I got a call from Conrad, who pitched some ideas to me, some of which have not even seen the light of day yet and will soon. And I'm really excited for people to see that stuff. But yeah, he kind of pitched it as a role where I'd get to have a lot of flexibility, do long form interviewing like I'd like to, host some shows, and still exercise that on-air broadcast presentation side of things that I love so much, while stepping a little bit outside of the box and reinventing, which I think the key to success in broadcasting especially is constant reinventing and understanding that mediums change. Traditional TV is not what it used to be. These things change. So I'm trying to kind of get ahead of that curve and take advantage of a multi-platform digital combat sports network almost, and see what's to come from that. And like I said, there's a lot of really cool opportunities that you guys are going to be hearing about soon. So it's really, really exciting. And I can't wait to get a chance to use this platform to do more long form interviewing and talk about things I'm really passionate about.
Well, I know you don't want to, spoil anything that's ahead, but I mean, will one of those be the John Alba Star Search? Could that be returning?
No Star Searches. No. And I'm going to get to do some more work on the Indies, which is exciting too, but right now I'm in the process of relocating from Florida back to New Jersey. So I'm kind of putting that stuff on hold right now. And then when the time is right, I'll hop back in, and you never know when the Emmy award winning John Alba character is going to show up at your local independent promotion.
Yeah. I mean, you have been taking a nice extended leave of absence from Limitless, John. I know that, your boys in Prestigious didn't exactly get the job done on that night, including yourself in your return to the ring.
I thought I looked very impressive in the ring. For the record, I took a gorilla press slam that I turned into a plunge. There's a funny story about that match, actually. We were laying it out for like a few weeks in advance, and the day before the match, I went to train at the Limitless Wrestling Dojo, and I trained for like 7 hours. I had planned to do an elbow drop in that match off the top rope. So all day long, I'm running elbow drops. My legs are like quivering because I'm just, my legs are so tired from going up to the top, falling, going up to the top, falling, going up to the top, falling. When you're not a trained wrestler and you're doing all this stuff, it hurts like hell. So I did like 40 elbow drops. And then about an hour and a half, 2 hours before the match, the people involved in the match decided, actually, we're cutting that from the match. So, but there is video of me doing elbow drops that maybe one day I'll post to social media. We'll see.
Nice. And for anyone who wants that story, search for the Limitless Wrestling Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, and you can hear all the stories about all that stuff. But let's get into what happened in this month, this April, because this is WrestleMania month, as we always know and love, and you being down in the mix there, great guest to have to talk about this, because you were so involved in around all this stuff from NXT, WWE. So we'll lead off with WWE. WrestleMania, the show happened, obviously, and there was, so again, I say this now, the show happened. You might be, depending when you're listening to this, of course, you may be saying, of course it did. Well, again, this is the first big Mania after, I would say after COVID, but really after the hellstorm that was 2020. So they had two nights. They wanted to get, initially like 45,000 in there per night, but they ended up settling on, I think it was around 25,000 or so. Over the two nights, nearly 41,000 tickets distributed and over $6.2 million in ticket revenue for the two nights. This is kind of their intro back into the world in terms of having fans, at least for a little while. The show is actually delayed, of course, due to weather issues. It was just kind of one of those things, like, of course it would be. And a lot of title changes, as there usually are over these two nights. We had Bianca Belair winning the women's title, SmackDown women's title over Sasha Banks. We had Sheamus winning the U.S. title, Apollo Crews winning the Intercontinental title, Rhea Ripley winning the Raw women's title. So NXT really kind of rose up there and took some gold home. AJ Styles and Omos winning the Raw and Tag Team titles, and Roman Reigns retaining his Universal title over Daniel Bryan and Edge in a three-way. And then they had this Randy Orton Fiend thing. That was, we'll talk about that in a minute. There was a Nigerian drum fight. Yes, this actually did happen with the return of Daba Kato, who turned out to be Commander Aziz later on, as we learn. The one and only Bad Bunny, the guy that moves the demos, teaming with Damian Priest against John Morrison and The Miz, looked great in doing so in this tag team match. Logan Paul making his WrestleMania debut and part of the Sami Zayn Kevin Owens match, and ended up being stunned by Owens at the very end. We had our Hall of Fame inductions, and last month when we covered March, this person hadn't been inducted yet, but they announced Ozzy Osbourne was going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame as part of the ceremony. Titus O'Neil and Rich Herring getting Warrior Awards. WWE is with all the late 2020 controversy about third-party deals with Cameo and Twitch and everything like that. They announced there's going to be limited Cameo availability for some of their stars as that partnership started getting going. The first NFTs were rolled out. I've heard this phrase a lot, that The Undertaker was going to be the focus of their first ever NFTs for WWE. There was rumors about potentially Becky Lynch returning at the show, which did not happen. We learned there were several changed finishes, one of them being the Orton and the Fiend. And this was, I guess I'll kick it over to you for just overall thoughts on the Mania experience 2 days. I mean, there was a much different feel because, again, there were so many restrictions and so many things we're learning. The vaccines hadn't really fully rolled out yet. And, you know, we're just kind of all trying to understand what normalcy is. And WrestleMania happened. They pulled it off.
Yeah, I was there live for both those nights in the press box, and it was a very, very weird experience. It was one of my first major events in person covering. I mean, I had been, because you have to remember, Florida was like, let's open up. Pardon me, Florida was like, let's open up and have people at all these events. So I was covering events, but this was definitely the most people at an event that I had covered to this point. And the weather was really the first thing and probably the main thing that I'll remember most about these nights. It was hurricane style weather both of these nights. I think it was the second night. No, the first night was the weather delay. The first night was the weather delay, and that was insane. That it was like such a microcosm for everything that was going on with getting this show off the ground. The second day, though, the weather was actually worse before the show, and I was like, this is a hurricane coming through here. So they eventually, things cleared up right before the show. That was just so surreal. And it is pretty crazy thinking back, Josh, that there's never been a weather delay at a WrestleMania prior to this, which they really did luck out.
Yeah. And you're right. It definitely was a microcosm for the of course. But they pulled it out. And when you kind of look back on the actual shows itself, in terms of in-ring, you know, things you watched that night, things you may have rewatched later on. The Belair win obviously stands out, because just the build to it and everything like that. What else do you take away from the actual weekend?
The two main events were very good. The two main events were great. I really enjoyed Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks. I thought they had great chemistry together. And Sasha Banks did her job and what she was supposed to do, elevated Bianca Belair to that next level. Do I think they followed up well with Bianca Belair? Not necessarily, but at that night, it was a big moment. Mm-hmm. And then the next night, I thought the three men put on a hell of a triple threat. I thought Roman Reigns was just awesome in that match. And yeah, Daniel Bryan, even though he wasn't all in per se, he still was Daniel Bryan. So it worked in that sense. There were a couple other matches I enjoyed. I did enjoy the Kevin Owens Sami Zayn match for the amount of time they had, which wasn't much. It was probably about 10 minutes. I thought they had about as good of a 10-minute WrestleMania match as you're going to have. I liked the Cesaro-Seth Rollins match. I thought that was a good match as well. I wish we would have gotten more from Cesaro on the fallout of that, but alas, we did not. So yeah, I thought there was some good stuff. There was definitely bad stuff. The Fiend and Randy Orton match was a disaster live, an absolute disaster. And I can't believe they opened up night two with that match. And yeah, nothing crazy memorable from these shows, but two good main events. And that's probably what stands out most for me.
Yeah. And one thing we didn't even mention was kind of a surprise for me, Bobby Lashley retained the WWE title.
Yeah, that was a good opening match. And I thought it was a missed opportunity, even though they were building Lashley as a strong heel, which they were. I thought it was a missed opportunity to really crown Drew McIntyre in front of your fans. And I felt he was kind of robbed of that. And I would be remiss, by the way, if I didn't mention Bad Bunny was great. He was really, really good live.
He was. Yeah, I think in terms of celebrities that have crossed over and had a match, I mean, top three for sure. Maybe number. He was really good. He put the time in, and yeah, it was good. We'll flip to NXT because NXT had two shows that weekend as well. Two takeovers, Stand and Deliver, were the names of the shows, and a ton of title changes here. Karrion Kross defeating Finn Balor to regain the NXT title he never officially lost due to the shoulder injury. Santos Escobar winning the Cruiserweight title in a ladder match. Raquel Gonzalez winning the women's title. MSK winning the men's tag team titles. And then Kyle O'Reilly being Adam Cole in the undisputed finale, so to speak. And, I assume obviously you weren't there live for those, but it was just, kind of a reset for NXT. You know, again, Karrion Kross not with the company anymore. Raquel Gonzalez doesn't have the title. MSK is this kind of weird. KOR maybe done. Adam Cole not there any longer. So just kind of a beginning of what would be a continuation of what would be a very transformative year for NXT.
Yeah, this is for all intents and purposes the beginning of the end as far as I see it for what we knew as what NXT would be. And it was a good show. There are good matches across. Karrion Kross winning the NXT title for the second time feels like a match of a bygone era at this point,
yeah.
Which is pretty crazy when all things are considered. I thought Raquel Gonzalez winning the title here was real nice. She's got a lot to offer, I feel, and I think she's someone that can be a star on that main roster. So I liked her getting the spot here. The Kyle O'Reilly-Adam Cole feud kind of went a little long for me, and I remember being a little exhausted watching this match live. But all things considered, again, just another event that just feels like it was so long ago, and it really wasn't, but it feels like a totally different era.
Certainly does. So let's go through this. We'll kind of split this list up into two as we're looking here, because so many different things happened this month. So this was the... This is a very interesting year. I keep saying that for WWE, but it really was when it came to this is the Khan era, right? And this is Nick Khan taking over and basically changing things within the company and also making some changes what we'd see in front of the cameras as well. This was the first of many cuts. WWE cutting 10 wrestlers, including Samoa Joe, the Iconics, and more. That was obviously kind of a big surprise, especially with Samoa Joe. I completely forgot about this. There was the Mickie James trash bag incident where she posted on social media she had been one of the talents or was cut as well. She received her belongings in a trash bag simply with, a piece of masking tape with her name on it and was kind of just put on social media essentially being like, this is how this run ends. Or, yeah, it was one of those things that, Triple H and Stephanie McMahon publicly apologized and I believe apologized directly to her, but this was part of a huge talent relation shakeup. Mark Carano, who was leading the department, who I believe was the one kind of blamed for this, was gone. There were some other people gone as well that weren't related to this. And then, John, we had front office changes starting en masse. We would feel like every, 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks or so, some new talent or some new group, rather, would be cut. People that we, never heard their names before, but it's like, okay, these people in PR are now gone. These people in merchandising are gone. This person in finance is gone. And you would see that the Khan tentacles, because it makes it sound dastardly, but he really, in WWE, we really had not seen this level of internal change. Obviously, in front of the cameras and talents, we've seen, mass cuts before. But in terms of like the company as a whole, it really had a lot of changes in this month.
Yeah, it had a ton. It was the reshaping of the organization and certainly feeling Nick Khan's influence. I am careful to say that everything is a result of Nick Khan. I think people have to remember that ultimately one person is the one who says this is okay to do, but there's certainly influence felt. And I thought his sit-down interview with Ariel Helwani kind of revealed a lot about what his mentality is and what his thinking is. And it's about taking that company to another level of branding that makes it a brand entity rather than just a sports entertainment company. And I think that's why you saw all this restructuring, bringing in the likes of Jamie Horowitz, who's in TV, a very controversial name, bringing him in the front office, and several others as well. So I think that's something that we're going to be seeing the effects of for many years to come here in WWE.
Six new international recruits started at the Performance Center. Bobby Tyler, a UK talent signed and made her UK NXT UK debut as Stevie Turner. We learned that Chris Jericho did the Steve Austin podcast, and a bit of a crossover there that we didn't expect. It was a really entertaining podcast there. I believe it debuted after WrestleMania, if I remember right. WWE and G4 announced they were partnering for an Xavier Woods competition series. It was supposed to debut in the fall, but ended up it's going to be at some point in the early 2022, if I read that right before. Nick Khan, in doing some press, announced that both Ronda Rousey and Becky Lynch would return. And later in the month, Rousey announced that she was pregnant and that she was going to be giving birth in September. So obviously that wasn't going to happen anytime soon. A Vladimir documentary was announced for WWE Network. Not Vladimir Kozlov fans, no. Vladimir, one of the super fans. It was going to be announced.
Seems like that shelf too, which stinks, because that would have been a lot of fun to see.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Yeah, it was a couple of them. And then there was the Luger documentary. That was, and it was just, yeah, no real reason for it.
The NXT 10-year anniversary thing too.
Yeah, very strange. WWE 2K22 was announced. Big change in the booth. We talked about a month of transformative change. We learned that Adnan Virk, who is a fixture on MLB Network, and he was on ESPN and ended up leaving there, kind of a little bit of a controversy. Had done really one of these guys you see with the Zone and kind of working a lot of different places, that he was going to be replacing Tom Phillips as the lead commentator on Monday Night Raw. It was learned afterwards that he didn't meet Vince McMahon on his first night, or really even before that. And I think it was like in the second or third week he finally actually met the guy talking in his ear for 3 hours a night. Viking Raiders returned to action after injury absence. As quickly as Santos Escobar won the Cruiserweight title, he lost it to Kushida on an episode of NXT. WWE was preparing to return to having live events, actually live touring. So we learned a little bit more about that. And then Pat McAfee, again, a month of change. It was announced that he was going to be joining the SmackDown announced team. John, thoughts on any of that?
The announced team changes really stood out to me a lot. Adnan Virk was a very risky hire. He's a total pro as a broadcaster. I think he's a great studio host. Wrestling play-by-play was not his forte. And it kind of shows that mentality of, well, do we need people who have product knowledge? And WWE has ventured into that territory often. And I feel like more often than not, it kind of falls in their face, where I think product knowledge does matter. Whether you want to admit that you're a wrestling company or not, it is important. And I thought Tom Phillips was really good at what he did. So I felt Tom kind of got the short end of the stick there. He would end up getting cut as well, and now is venturing his way back into broadcasting. So that was a whole mess. And, Pat McAfee, I think, does a good job on SmackDown, and I think he brings a lot out of Michael Cole, which is good. But that's probably the thing I remember most from that period of time.
Triple H, in doing some promotion for TakeOver, said, and I want to pull this quote out, "The promotional opportunity for us is much better on a Tuesday." And also, not having a narrative where it's constantly about an imaginary war, this imaginary battle, because as you know, people can say what they want, but the truth of the matter is you compete against everything. He was talking about NXT's impending move at that point to Tuesdays instead of going up against AEW on Wednesdays. Main reason for that, obviously, was the NHL and some deals, some changes with USA and all those type of things. So just want to kind of pull that out there, and thought that was interesting. Daniel Bryan, you mentioned the match earlier. He said he felt detached during that Mania match, and he, as interesting as this is now, he at the moment, he said he was questioned being fulfilled and whether he wanted to be a full-time wrestler. He lost later that much on SmackDown, lost a rematch to Roman Reigns for the title. He was, quote-unquote, banished from SmackDown at the time. A lot soon, maybe he'll go That means he'll appear on Raw, or they'll do one of these things, but it would end up being his final match in the company. And then obviously we know what happened shortly after that. Charlotte Flair was out for a bit with dental surgery. WWE hired Megan O'Brien to be a backstage correspondent at SmackDown. The 6-year concussion lawsuit for WWE finally came to an end as it was thrown out of yet another appeals court. WWE, David reported that they were in talks with MLW for a talent partnership. I don't know if that is even how much that actually occurred. If it was just a, you know, who knows. But now, you know, nothing ever came of it. Kind of, you know, who knows. TakeOver Dublin was canceled. And then Young Rock was renewed for season 2. Thoughts on any of that?
No, I mean, I think the Brian stuff is probably the most noteworthy of all that on the grand scheme of things, where we obviously know how that played out. And I always appreciate his honesty and his transparency in his interviews. He never beats around the bush. He's always very straightforward. And I think that's a rare sight you see from a lot of wrestling talent. And yeah, the MLW stuff would have been interesting, but you know, MLW contracts too are in the grand scheme of things relatively small. So I'm not so sure how that would have panned out in the end for either side. Obviously bringing in WWE talent on an MLW show would have certainly been interesting if that door swung both ways, but I'm not sure that it would have.
Yeah. To me at the time, and again, this is before the mass cuts we'd see later in the year. The big thing was, how are we going to get these NXT talents? Cause at this point, I mean, there was like, you know, dozens of people that needed either TV time or in-ring time. Cause you know, the Coconut Loop shows were done and they just needed guys and girls to get work. So at the time, I remember hearing this thing, and huh, this would make sense because MLW gets a lot of these talents, you know, for, they're going to probably get them for not paying at all. WWE's like, we just need a place to have them. MLW gets us to have a interaction, a association with WWE and NXT in any form. And you kind of get the best of both worlds. It would seem to make sense, but obviously, you know, that changed a lot with the cuts that would come later on. But this, I think this year definitely changed a lot when it came to organizations working together and saying, look, there's more talent than ever before. How do we get them exposure? And obviously we saw that would change because, you know, WWE make a lot more cuts. Let's go to AEW. And AEW didn't have a, you know, they didn't have a, one of the things looking back in this, you know, WWE, when they have, you know, a monthly pay-per-view, there's often more news that kind of comes out of those things, title changes, you know, new angles, all these things. And AEW really doesn't have that. It's kind of a slow, steady drumbeat on the non-pay-per-view months, and more of the same for this month in April. Mike Tyson was announced. He was going to be appearing on Dynamite returning. This was announced during WrestleMania week, you know, interesting placement there. On the show, he aligned with the Inner Circle, so he was teaming with Chris Jericho, or is his friend now, so to speak, instead of being an adversary like we saw him the year before. He was special enforcer in a match on Dynamite and actually punched Cash Wheeler in a nice spot there. Blood and Guts was finally announced. It was going to be coming back, or debuting rather, featuring the Inner Circle against the Pinnacle in a bit of a blood feud there. Kensuke Takeshita appeared in an AEW house show that happened during WrestleMania weekend, and then he would appear a few more shows after that. Ivelisse was released, and she was not happy about it, said she was mistreated by a coach there. Story didn't really go anywhere, but it was, you know, it's kind of one of those things where he didn't really have a lot of talents being cut or leaving, and she was one of the few. Darius Martin, the brother of Dante Martin, underwent ACL surgery. So obviously he's going to be out for a while, and boy, what a year that his brothers had in AEW. And then John Moxley defended the U.S. title, IWGP U.S. title against Yuji Nagata on Dynamite. So yeah, not a lot of interesting news there. Obviously the return of Mike Tyson and, you know, the association with him continues. We never did get the, you know, singles match versus Jericho or anything like that we may have thought we got when he appeared the year before. But it was just kind of, again, just setting the table and the constant drumbeat for AEW.
Yeah, more or less. And they were kind of starting that build to Double or Nothing as well in April. I actually did an interview with Darius Martin that's going to drop on one-on-one with John Alba on adfreeshows.com in the coming weeks. And we got an update on how his recovery is going and what he thinks of what Dante's doing. So it was cool to chat with him. I think the cool thing about what AEW did this particular month was, you know, the Yuji Nagata inclusion was kind of that first on-screen, hey, we're opening this door to Japan a little more, And then we get this huge influx of Japanese talent that started coming in over the course of the summer and the fall. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. We flipped to Impact. They had some interesting things happen during the month. Obviously, the big thing was Rebellion, their pay-per-view for April. And Kenny Omega continued the Bell Collector angle gimmick, so to speak, defeating Rich Swann to win the Impact World title in a title versus title match. They brought in the big gun. Moro Ranallo was on the call for this match, and it was really good. It was a really fun match, as most expected. It did the pay-per-view at that point was trending towards its most successful in years for Impact. And obviously, as we've talked about in this show, they've struggled a lot just with trying to shake the past in terms of reputation. And, you know, Omega did this was a nice kind of next chapter in that story and trying to rebuild some credibility there with fans. A lot of title changes here. Josh Alexander winning the X Division title, which would begin a really, really impressive run for him and really kind of elevated his stock within the company. Rachel Ellering and Jordan Grace winning the Knockouts tag team titles. Big Cass made his return at Rebellion. And in the past show, we talked about him coming back on the indies and perhaps he was going to get signed somewhere. And then, yeah, he appeared at Rebellion as a injury replacement. Hardcore Justice, they had this show on Impact Plus during the month. And not a lot of newsworthy stuff here. Really, that Knockouts champion Deonna Purrazzo defeating Jazz in a title versus career match. I think that's what most people thought was going to happen. Then Jazz finally retiring after that. Nevaeh was released. And then El Fantasma, you're talking about the forbidden door to Japanese talent. Impact really embraced that almost like no other. AEW obviously has brought in some talent, but Impact did their thing. And El Fantasma was announced that he was going to be making his debut for Impact Wrestling pretty soon. So yeah, the big news, obviously, Kenny Omega winning the title, defeating Rich Swann. I feel bad because Swann was just kind of like, I don't say shuttered away, but didn't really have a chance to get a rematch. It was kind of just all the focus is on Omega and other programs. And, you know, Rich Swann never really got the opportunity to kind of get a lot of the shine off of that. But yeah, Omega was the champion and began a multi-month run with the title of both Impact and AEW.
Yeah, when I look back at all this, the thing that stands out most to me is Josh Alexander's ascension. And it just frustrates me, man, because I thought Impact did this a couple times this year where they really start building something very successfully and the execution in the big moment isn't there. And I felt what happened with Alexander against Moose later in the year really kind of undid just about everything they established with him, starting with this X Division title win. And yeah, Kenny did great work in Impact. I would have liked to have seen a little more from him there, but I also recognize that was not his primary responsibility. And as we've learned since, he was quite beat up. So I guess there was an opportunity for some good cross promotion. It helped in the short term. I don't think it's really going to have much long-term ramification on things.
I would agree. Yeah, I did a show on that a few months ago. And yeah, kind of looking back on now that the partnership kind of came to an end, or at least the world title angle with Alexander winning it. And yeah, to your point, I didn't like that at all. I thought if the goal was to get Moose with the title, do it in the more traditional way. I mean, they run events almost every month, especially on Plus, run quarterly pay-per-views, whatever the schedule is. There was plenty of opportunity to do that, but I thought the moment there with and I was surprised because, Alexander was doing so much media leading up to that. I saw him doing interviews all over the place. It just seemed like it was just cresting at the right time. It was the right guy to beat. Obviously, had he beat an Omega for the title, it would have meant a lot more. But Cage is like, okay, you get what you get, right? But he just never, like, just to have him lose like 5 minutes later,
I don't understand it at all.
I like Moose as champion, but he's not going anywhere. He's going to be there. Have him win in Slammiversary or something. I build to it. It was. I'm glad you said that because I didn't like where that ended up.
No, and this is kind of the beginning of it all here. And they told a great story leading up to it, and then the execution was not there.
We'll go through Japan. Some of the news and notes there. Basically, this is all New Japan. So, at Sakura Genesis, Will Ospreay, one of the best wrestlers in the world, winning the IWGP World Title / Divas Title, depending on how you like the design, from Kota Ibushi. Roppongi 3K winning the Junior Tag Team Championship. Tag Team Championships, easy for me to say, for the fifth time. Okada was learned he was going to be challenging Ospreay for the belt at Wrestle Grand Slam in May. The New Japan Strong Openweight title was announced, and they had a tournament. Tom Lawler, the Filthy One, you can hear on this very website, becomes the first ever Strong Openweight champion. And then three May shows were canceled due to the state of emergency. And this kind of continues. I mentioned before, I'm not a huge Japanese wrestling watcher, but you know, this is a continuation of a very uneven year for New Japan. Yeah. Obviously, you know, you could pick a lot worse champions than Will Ospreay, but we were used to these, you know, long title reigns, and all of a sudden we'd seen a few title changes in a short amount of time, and they're just trying to kind of figure it out. And obviously Will Ospreay's run would end a little bit prematurely due to a back injury, but yeah, they were just trying to do whatever they could that worked and work around restrictions and working around state of emergencies. They've had earthquakes and just an absolutely hellish 2 years for New Japan.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Bad couple of years for New Japan where they just seemed like they had so much momentum. And unfortunately, a lot of that has gone by the wayside. And I hope that as they try to expand more into the United States, that eyes eventually pick back up on them. But I'm just not sure that that's going to happen anytime soon. I do want to throw a little shout out to your boy, Tom Lawler, who I thought did a great job. If you're watching Strong, there's some really good stuff from him and Fred Rosser this past year that you can go check out. But outside of that, I thought it was a really rough year for New Japan.
Ring of Honor kept on keeping on. Jay versus Mark Briscoe headlined the 500th episode of Ring of Honor. So these full-time deals they signed, and looking at what happened now, it's wild look back on. Mike Bennett and his wife Maria Canales signing full-time deals with the company. And Ian Riccaboni, really talented play-by-play announcer, re-signing.
He's so good, man. He is so good. I really genuinely think he may be the best play-by-play guy in wrestling today.
You know, I was kind of, let me take these 2 points and I want to go back to that. Women's Division Wednesday was announced because Ring of Honor was going to was building towards their women's world title tournament, which they announced in March. And then a month after, essentially announced they were still working together, Ring of Honor and CML announced that the two were no longer working together as they continue their strange run down there south of the border. So getting back to Riccoboni, I was actually thinking about this, putting together the list today. You know, I assume he's going to be a free agent and available just like anyone else is perhaps, you know, he's a talent, but you know, it's not an in-ring talent. You know, if you're one of these other companies, is this the time to make a play for him? Obviously, you know, we talked about WWE and kind of how they view announcers, but you know, the AEW, do you maybe take a run at him for dark shows or maybe some of these, Battle of the Belt specials. If you're Impact, do you say, look, we need to make the move. Maybe Matt Stryker's not working out like we liked, and now's the time. I mean, it's sad that a lot of these people are losing work and losing opportunities, but it also provides a ton of opportunities for these groups on the outside to say, if we're ever to make a move, this could be a guy that we make the move with, because who knows how some of these talents don't come on the market that often, you know?
Yeah, I think Impact would benefit greatly from Ian Riccoboni as its play-by-play guy. Not a huge fan of the announced team there, and I don't take shots at anybody personally. The combination is just not my taste personally.
Yeah.
And listen, as AEW continues to expand, you know, you have Rampage, you have other programming with these specials. Maybe that is a place where you bring someone like him in and offer a different voice. Maybe if Jim Ross moves into a little bit of a different role here as he goes through some of his cancer treatment, maybe that opens up an opportunity for someone. There's a lot of potential options. I think Ian Riccoboni is really talented, and I hope that he lands somewhere that he will get an opportunity to show how good he is. And I also want to tack on here, you mentioned the Women's Division Wednesday. I actually thought Ring of Honor did a really good job showcasing women's wrestling this year, which is not something that I would have thought at the onstart, but they did a really nice job and gave a good platform. And I've spoken to a lot of women's talent who have done work with Ring of Honor, who had nothing but great things to say about it. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued to see where some of those talents end up, especially Roxy and then Trisha Dora as well, who just appeared in Limitless. And a lot of people have a lot of good things to say. She just did a recent dark match, or AEW dark match rather. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be fascinating to see. This business is always fascinating when there's movement, but what organizations are smart enough to snatch up some of this young talent that again, if they're like, we the time to invest is now, right? And the hope is they jump on this, and there's so much talent out there. And if an organization really wants to get better, especially from the ground up, there's no better time to do it than now, on the announce desk, in the ring, and all that. Let's go to some of the other headlines from the month. This is just kind of running the gamut of everything else. Terry Funk, we learned he was recovering from COVID-19. Dark Side of the Ring set its debut date for May, and the full season of topics was revealed. Davey Richards announced that he was going to be coming back after a long absence, focusing on school. And boy, did he didn't just have a comeback. He seemed to be working like three times a week, like year round. It was absolutely crazy how much stuff he ended up doing. CMLL and Bandido announced they were parting ways. Josh Barnett defeated John Moxley at Bloodsport in a match that had been put off a few times. Speaking of John Moxley, he made a surprise appearance at GCW Spring Break during WrestleMania weekend to confront his old pal and nemesis, Nick Gage. Fight TV was acquired by Triller, or were they? There was a big announcement, and then we have no idea. Actually, it sounded like the sale didn't actually go through. Didn't hear much about that afterward. MLW and Vice TV announced a deal, and they finally kind of saw some roots the other day with Fightland, like new original content with Fightland being on there, and probably more 1 hour specials as the year goes on. They also announced they're going to be returning returning in front of live fans. They announced a new season. And so things were looking up for MLW. EC3 was announced. He was hospitalized with an infection that kept him in the hospital for quite some time. Kenny Dykstra of the Spirit Squad announced he was retiring. The NWA announced that they were going to be returning in June with a pay-per-view called When Our Shadows Fall. Steve McMichael, Mongo McMichael from the WCW days and obviously from the Chicago Bears and the NFL, revealed that he had ALS and a very sad story. Sadie Gibbs, a young wrestler for UK-based wrestler, who had been with AEW and just due to, again, the pandemic could not actually travel back and forth, announced that she was going to be retiring. And then these two headlines is kind of, again, the things that come up and then just go away. It was announced that Andrade was going to be taking on Alberto El Patron for a show in July. And also this Federación Wrestling was going to be debuting in Mexico, and all types of names thrown out, and the show actually just never happened because they never get off the ground. And there was a lot of speculation about kind of whether this was going to happen, almost a too good to be true thing. And then we learned it was. Thoughts on any of that?
I think when I look at that list, what stands out most to me is this is kind of the beginning of a very big year for GCW, where you had John Moxley and his integration with Nick Gage. But this is kind of where you see that momentum being piggybacked off. They had a good Tampa showing and into a huge summer. Matt Cardona and everything he did for them and is doing for them, and Effie and all these people getting involved with them, where GCW, I would argue GCW might be the number three promotion in the U.S. right now, or at least is making a legitimate contention for that. So I feel like this is around the time where it really picked up a lot of momentum.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up. They have a good claim for promotion of the year, I would say.
Easily.
They're running shows all the time. They're bringing in interesting names all the time, interesting angles all the time. And it's, if for a company that has they don't have TV, right? They just have pay-per-views and they have buzz. It's wild. Yeah. I think almost without a doubt, they have to be promotion of the year.
Yeah. I think they belong in that conversation. And I've been spoken about this on social media. Like, I did not think that they handled the beginning of the pandemic super well, but then they kind of got everything together and put on these shows that are really, really, really strong. And whether deathmatch wrestling is your thing or not, you know, there is stuff that's not deathmatch wrestling on those shows, and people connect with their talent passionately, and that's kind of that ECW vibe, right? And now they're going to run Hammerstein Ballroom in January. So I think it's pretty cool to see them get this momentum.
I agree. And two things that I missed on previous shows and kind of going through the list, I wanted to just throw these out there. So on January, The Undertaker appeared on the Joe Rogan podcast, and it was on there for, you know, more than an hour. It's kind of an interesting pairing. And he had made some comments about how WWE was quote unquote hard to watch, and The talent were soft and much different than it was back in his day. And that was it definitely set off some frustration and some people firing back at the Undertaker. I remember the New Day, or it might've been Big E specifically, had made some comments, or, you know, a lot of the current talent were not happy with this. And there was one of those things. And, yeah, later he would clarify it. And, you know, obviously he's doing work or was doing work with NXT and when Triple H was there. And Triple H was asked about it in during this month of April, and said, you know, everyone's viewpoint is a little bit different. He's been great, you know, looking forward to having him back and so on and so forth. But do you remember the when he made those comments and what was your thoughts at the time?
Yeah, that was ridiculous. It was so out of touch and just those mentalities that some of these talent have from that era of back when boys were men and back when we used to have guns and people willing to fight in the locker room. It's like, well, guess what? Half the people you worked with are dead now, and they're dead from overdosing, they're dead from reactions to steroids, they're dead from all these myriad of things that that you thought made you all tough back in the day, that now we are seeing it did quite the opposite. And it was not a bad thing that we have locker rooms now where there's a much more healthy environment. Generally speaking, people are encouraging of each other. Sure, maybe they're a little more cognizant of emotions, but I don't view that as a bad thing. Sure, they like playing video games now instead of getting into bare knuckle brawls in the locker rooms, but I have no issues with that either. So I thought this was a very out of touch comment from Mark Calaway, quite frankly. And I was surprised to hear him say it.
And then in March, we talked about the exploding death match and just the debacle that happened at the end of this.
Oh, I was there for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then what we didn't actually talk about was the so actually I'll start there. When you're there, what is the feeling inside? Imagine it must have been the same feeling all of us were having at home.
It was that was it. That's all I remember. My buddy turned to me, he goes, "That was it?" I said, "I think so. I don't know." And people booed. That's the first time I can remember hearing booing at an AEW show at the product, which was pretty crazy. So that was wild. That was very wild. And I mean, Tony Khan immediately tried to retcon it on the post conference call and the scrum, where he tried to add a storyline explanation for it. But I wish that they had just owned that it was a mishap and you trudge on from there.
I would agree. Yeah. I wrote a column at that point, said the same thing. I think that we talked about last month. It was I think sometimes it had to be more pro sports of like, look, I mean, especially because it wasn't like Dynamite. This was something that people actually paid for.
Well, I was going to say, you sold an entire pay-per-view on the idea that the ring was going to explode.
Right. And you have to give at that point, I wanted Tony Khan to be more of an embodiment of the fans in terms of like, I understand this and we're going to make it right. I'm as disappointed as you are. And we need to figure out this doesn't happen. It's just something where it's like, there was an acknowledgement of an issue and that I'm with you guys. I didn't like this either, which he did months and months and months later on the Dan Le Batard show when he was asked about it. But in that moment, I just, I wasn't looking for here's every single thing here's all the action points we're going to take, just some sort of acknowledgement of, yeah, this was not good. And we're going to make sure it doesn't happen again and figure out what happened here. You know, that's all I was looking for.
Yeah. And the story was done so well with Kingston coming out and covering Moxley. And I was like waiting for that big moment and oof.
Yeah. Yikes. And so I put on here, we didn't actually talk last week about the, for March, about the explanation, which was Kingston saying it was essentially like,
he passed out more or less from anxiety.
Yeah. Anxiety and trauma and things like that. And it was kind of like, okay, let's just move on past this as much as possible. I didn't love it at the time. Obviously, you know, I didn't love it because they didn't really make it part of the character, so to speak. Not that I expect him to be passing out all the time, but they had never talked about that before with Eddie Kingston. And then all of a sudden it was like, this happened, and then they never address it again. And of course, then he does this great piece in the Players Tribune that just came out as it kind of like in a way kind of tied back to this and in real life. And I wish that they had done that. They'd kind of figured out a way to
lean into it more. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, and not to exploit it, but you know, do it in a way that makes sense. It was kind of just a, yeah, I think this is one of the few times that we've seen, you know, Tony Khan kind of public adversity that he didn't really respond to that well and didn't really know what to do. So it's kind of like, let's just get away from this as much as possible.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm with you entirely on that.
So that's it. That's a whole month of April. I guarantee there's things that we may have missed along the way. A lot of things happen in pro wrestling every single month. But let me know at Twitter. Josh Nason, if I missed something that stood out, a storyline or something, just let me know. We'll tackle that on a future show. So, John, I appreciate the time. Before I let you go, I want to throw the microphone to you once again and let us know again what things you've talked about ad-free shows, but specific shows coming up that you may be excited about, things to watch out for, ways to follow you guys on social media. And are you still doing the Living the Gimmick Patreon as well?
No, all that is
now under the
come to a close, where now I'm exclusively with adfreeshows.com. But again, you can find all my content on adfreeshows.com, AFS on YouTube.com. I've got my long form human interest pro wrestling interview series that drops every single Thursday, one-on-one with John Alba, that I'm really proud of that. And there's a lot of really noteworthy and newsworthy stuff that comes out of it. And I'm surprised that not some of the sites don't pick up on some of it, because there's some really eye-opening stuff that comes out of these interviews. But I've got that going on. I've got this Up for Debate series with Danny Cage, where we've done Rock versus Austin, DX versus the NWO, Bobby Heenan versus Paul Heyman. It's a really fun, pardon the interruption style debate series that looks awesome, that you can check out there, that drops every single week on AFS. And keep an ear out for me on some of Conrad Thompson's podcasts, because you might be hearing more of me soon, and you might be hearing some brand new shows as well. So just keep your ears open at John Alba on social media, JONALBA. You can find all my good stuff there.
And for the one-on-one series, is there one that particularly you people should check out? I know you're really happy about the Daniel Garcia one. I remember.
Yeah, I thought the Daniel Garcia one was probably one of my favorite interviews I've ever done, period. That one was great. I just laid one down that hasn't released yet as we tape this, with Mikey Ruckus, the producer for all of AEW's music, the production coordinator for them, that I thought was incredible. So there's a lot of real good stuff there. I spoke with Willow Nightingale, Ashley Vox, Fred Rosser, so many. Danny Limelight was one of my favorites. So just you learn so much about these people as human beings and the journey, and how we all have that commonality of wanting to get to that place that we really want to go. And I think that that's not just a Bruce Springsteen analogy, but also something that a lot of us live by. So I hope that you guys can check that out. It is available for free every single Saturday on AFS on YouTube.com.
Coming back full circle to the boss. I knew that.
That's
that
right.
That's
what I do, man. Full circle storytelling.
Well, congratulations on making the leap. Congratulations on making the decision to move back to the Northeast, the best
Dirty
East.
Jersey.
That's right. That's right. Even though you're close to being in New England, you're not quite.
I'm an adopted New Englander at this point. You know, I went to college in New England. I worked in New England. I'm an adopted New Englander.
That's right. A proud adoptee of the 207, put it that way.
There you go.
That's right. John Alba, congratulations. Good fortunes for everything coming up. And thanks so much for stopping by Josh Nason's Punch Out again.
Thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it.
All right. Big thanks to all you guys for dropping by. Big thanks to John Alba talking about that crazy month of April. I mean, just little things like, you know, Terry Funk having COVID. I completely forgot about. I forgot that Mike Tyson returned on AEW Dynamite. Completely forgot about that. And yeah, I mean, there was the Mania stuff, and just to see how much changed in like 6 months, 7 months. It was wild. I forgot about the Mickey James trash bag incident. This was absolutely batshit crazy. Adnan Virk taking over. Man, says, as much as people don't like WWE, a lot of stuff happens there on a given basis. It's crazy stuff. So yeah, big thanks to John for stopping by, and thanks to all you guys for listening. May will be coming out in just a couple days with a brand new guest as well. And this has been a lot of fun. I hope you guys are enjoying it. Please spread the word, share it, do whatever you can, let people know. And yeah, I greatly appreciate it. Any of the time you spend listening to these, sharing about it, or and really any of the podcast guest hosts here on WrestlingObserver.com. And until next time, which will be in a couple days, insert catchphrase here.